grisly one.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
World turned and churned on the dance floor to Donna Summers. Spring it may be, but it's not spring-like outside, as the remnants of the number four nor'easter is still out and about. And amongst the NYCHA residents of the New York City Housing Authority, largest in the nation, many, many hundreds were still without heat and hot water. And one is wondering when it's ever going to get better. And it's become part of the political fight between the two Italian stallions to determine who is the supreme cuisine in all of New York State, whether it is Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, or comrade Bill de Blasio. In fact, remember when Cuomo toured public housing more than a week ago? He was shocked.
It is just shocking that in New York State, we would have people who are subjected to these conditions. And on behalf of the people of the state, I apologize to the NYCHA residents because they deserve better and they'll get better.
And then he said, you know, if these were wealthy folks, the repairs would have been made lickety-split.
Do you think for 1 minute, if the tenants of NYCHA were powerful and wealthy, the city would be saying it's going to take us 4 years to change a boiler? Do you think that would be the response?
And then he said, it's not dollars alone. You got to deal with the incompetence there.
It doesn't matter how much money you pour into NYCHA if they are incompetent to spend it. It's like pouring more and more water through a pipe with a hole in it.
And then he put a call out to Donald Trump.
President Trump says he wants to make America great again. President Trump should go back to Puerto Rico and tell me, did he make Puerto Rico great again? Let President Trump come and visit these houses and let him tell me that he made America great again.
And he said that politicians are pandering.
Politicians have been pandering to the people of NYCHA for years. And the heat's still not on, and the water is still not on, and the mold is still there, and the elevator still doesn't work.
And then finally he said he will not sign the state budget unless there's a real remedy to make repairs.
And I pledge the residents of NYCHA, this hand will not sign the state budget unless there is a real remedy that is going to make the repairs at NYCHA and make them in real time.
On the line to discuss that, Greg B. Smith, reporter for New York's Hometown News, the Daily News. He's been covering the NYCHA story and actually broke some of the initial stories that have led to all these exposés. Thanks for joining us again, Greg, on the Drive Home at 5.
Happy to be there, Curtis.
Okay, I had a chuckle when the governor was talking about politicians pandering to the residents of NYCHA. Isn't that pretty much what the governor is doing?
This is Batman versus Superman, don't you think? And this is basically what you got is this, these two guys are going at each other, and in the interim, the tenants of the Forest Houses and Taft Houses and Van Dyke Houses and all over the place are dealing with these boilers that are from like the Eisenhower administration, and it's ridiculous.
Now, the role of de Blasio in all of this, because his handlers are saying, hey, look, we're partly culpable, but these problems really started in the Bloomberg administration, especially with the last chairman that he appointed to the Housing Authority, who he plucked from Wall Street.
Yes, Lehman Brothers John Rea you're talking about.
Right, right. So would they be partially correct in that, that this is not just a problem that they've had to deal with, but it was really a problem starting with the Bloomberg administration, who never dealt with it?
It's that, but it's also the federal government. I mean, pretty much 90% of the capital spending at NYCHA comes from HUD. That's the feds. And then another like 60% of the operating budget comes from HUD. You know, like the tenant's rent pays for about 40% of everything that, you know, goes on over there. So they really rely on the federal government. The state really has not been involved in this. Pataki, back in the 90s, stopped sending money to NYCHA. And so what you have here now is you have this desperate money situation. And Cuomo, to his credit, has actually started putting money into it again. I mean, there was no state money for years and years and years. Bloomberg also, you know, also wasn't very interested in public housing. It just didn't really seem to capture his attention. So, yeah, de Blasio has to deal with these outside issues, but you still have the same basic management problems. This place is still mismanaged. That's the thing. The guy's been there for 4 years. You know, I mean, this is not like you can't keep saying it's Bloomberg at some point, right?
Well, what exactly, if anything, is he doing about this? Because this is turning into a major black eye for him. This should be his constituency, you know, the lower middle class, the poor and impoverished who live in public housing.
Yeah, public housing used to be this place that people really, really wanted to get into. And it was because it was, you know, they were very careful about keeping the place maintained, and that just kind of stopped in the 80s, and so now it's falling apart. So yeah, sure, de Blasio has done some things. He's put a lot of money into roof repairs, for example. He's committed $1 billion over 10 years. I mean, some of that time will be after he's long gone, but he's committed money for that. He's put some money into boilers. That was announced shortly after everybody was freezing in January. That's another $200 million. And he's also forgiven, like, for a long time, I never understood this, but the New York City Police Department used to charge NYCHA to patrol them. So de Blasio, to his credit, got rid of that. So he's done some things.
All right. Now, I would think, based on your breakdown, of course, 90% that HUD underwrites and an additional 60% for the maintenance and operation, that neither Cuomo nor de Blasio, even if they were working together, could possibly come up with enough money to repair the old structures of the NYCHA projects, that they really need Dr. Ben Carson. They really need to have a relationship with the Trump administration, and they don't seem to have one.
No, it's really weird because Dr. Ben Carson has put out a budget that would just destroy NYCHA. I mean, just would blow it up. But it's not a real document if you think about it, because then it goes into the Congress and it becomes a different document. And so now there's some discussion now, in fact today, that there actually might be some light at the end of the tunnel from the Fed. So, I mean, this is a moving target. We're not anywhere near the finish line on this.
Now, I noticed that with the announcement of our campaign to challenge Governor Cuomo in the Democratic primary, Cynthia Nixon was invited by Eric Adams, Brooklyn Borough President, to come tour NYCHA projects. Do you think she'll do that? Because
yes, of course she'll do
that. Yeah, but she would have to end up condemning her Medici, her mentor, the very reason she's running, Mayor de Blasio, right?
I would, Curtis, point out, where did she go for her first press conference? Brownsville. So she's married to this. I mean, she has to do a Tale of Two Cities that will implicate the mayor of the Tale of Two Cities. And that's what's going to happen with this. The only thing that's weird about it is that she seems to be running a city-only platform where there's no reference to upstate, but I guess that'll change over the next couple weeks.
Now, both these guys have a history in public housing, both Cuomo, who was the head of HUD, and obviously de Blasio, who worked for him in the Bill Clinton administration. Is it your understanding they just have no communication on this level at all in terms of dealing with something that they are somewhat familiar with?
I don't understand the dynamic other than it's mano a mano. I mean, it's just they both worked in HUD. So did, by the way, so did Kristen Gillibrand, I would point out. And they should know that this is a frustrating situation, but instead they seem to try to blame one another. I mean, it is true that the state of New York does not run the housing authority, and de Blasio makes a point of going after Cuomo all the time. I don't get that. And then on the other hand, Cuomo really has you know, he did show up at a development on the 12th of March in the year 2018. And when was the last time he was at one of these places?
Yeah, well, he was shocked, Greg. He was shocked what he discovered. So, like, what? He's been in projects in Chicago all over the place when he was HUD chairman that were, like, 10 times worse condition.
That's correct. And he also, you know, when he was a HUD secretary, he took over some of these places.
Yes, yes.
So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where this is going. It just seems like two toddlers in a playpen, you know. I don't get it.
Do appreciate it, but you've been a great gumshoe reporter, broke a lot of stories that have caused the city to have to fess up because they've messed up. That's Greg B. Smith, reporter for New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
Working.
As we continue here on the drive home at 5, and a lot of you have reconnected to WABC because you've broken out of your work stall, you're back in your car, your pickup truck, your van, and you're listening to us on terrestrial radio, or maybe you're still stuck at your work stall and you're catching us on the streaming audio or maybe on your app. But there is a proposal being made here in the city of New York that could catch a wave effect in cities across the nation. It was proposed by Councilman Rafael Espinal of Bushwick, Brooklyn, and it has to do with protecting workers who don't answer their phones or read emails once work is finished. Let's get the nitty-gritty details. Thanks for joining us on the drive home at 5, Rafael.
Thanks for having me, Curtis. A pleasure.
Okay, so where did the idea come from? And try to explain it, like, just in the course of a regular 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, so this is a fairly new idea that came out of Paris and Italy, where you are able to disconnect from the workplace after you leave work. You know, now that everything has gone digital, we have emails, we have text messages, we have social media, we are expected more by our employers to be on call and available 24 hours a day. And there's no clear line on when our workday begins and our workday ends. So the idea is that if an employer calls you, you as an employee can say, well, you know what, I have some personal things I got to take care of. I can't really take this call right now. And I have the anxiety of being retaliated against by your job when you get to work the next day.
Now, were people bringing this concept to you, claiming that they have felt pressured?
No one brought this to me. This is something that I read that was working in Europe. But, you know, I know the struggle of all New Yorkers who work and depend on their jobs. And I know and I've seen a lot of people who are glued to their work after they leave work. And I just thought it's important that we are able to disconnect and, you know, decompress and spend time with our families, spend time with ourselves so that we can you know, draw that clear line of between our work and our personal lives.
Would this, councilman, be an opt-out thing? It's sort of like if I were an employee and I don't mind my boss or my manager, whoever is in my unit, contacting me, I could say, that's okay. Yeah, you're free to call me whenever you need me.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, the employer can still call you. Your boss can still call you. You know, we're workaholics here in New York, and a lot of us enjoy doing our work. A lot of us do plug in on our own time. So this doesn't change that aspect. This just says that if you decide not to pick up that one call or check that email on a certain night, you shouldn't be afraid that you'll be retaliated against when you go to work.
Well, now, would this apply to a small mom-and-pop shop? Because, you know, they had limited personnel, and a lot of times, if they don't convey things overnight, the shop may not open early enough in the morning. They may not be able to get the delivery at the right time. There are a lot of potential complications for a mom-and-pop shop.
Oh, most definitely, and I made sure that, you know, businesses that have less than 10 employees aren't part of the conversation because I understand the complexities of that. And also, you know, the bill does also take to account that there are people who need to be on call 24 hours, so there's an exemption for that. And it's open to interpretation and conversation as the hearing moves forward. You know, I want to make sure that businesses don't feel this is an extra burden, but I also want to make sure that workers feel protected and are not afraid
of being able to spend some personal time on their own.
Now, Councilman Rafael Espinal, you know, both in the private sector and in the public sector, there are some managers and some bosses who are real ball busters. They're obsessed with tracking down their employees when they get an idea, when they get a concept. They just, there's this compulsion to have to reach out and communicate, even if it is just to leave you an email or a text. Are there any penalties that would be part and parcel of your legislation to those who are busting your chops?
I mean, let me just say this off the bat. You know, I'm one of those compulsive guys that gets ideas and wants to include my staff and make sure that they are aware of what I'm thinking about that exact moment. But I let them know they do not have to respond to me. They can wait till the morning, but I just want to make sure it gets out and it's in their email inbox for them to check later. But, you know, there are penalties. If you're found guilty of requiring your employee or found guilty of retaliating against your employee for not responding to you, you would have to pay a fine to the city of $250 and $500 to the employee that was affected. You know, if you end up firing that employee, then you would have to pay a bigger fine of $2,500 to that employee and also any lost time that they might have lost while they were out at work.
Now, Councilman Espinal, prior to this, you had led the charge to undo the repressive cabaret laws that had been established by Rudy Giuliani and even before his era as mayor. So would that apply to the 24/7 lifestyle that employees live, where they work all night and maybe they max and relax during the day? Would it take into effect that if I'm checking into work at 8 and I'm not getting out until 4 in the morning, you got to leave me alone until what? Maybe about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
So the employer will have the flexibility of creating the policy on what that looks like, because we do know every job is different. But the idea is that when you leave work or before you get to work, whatever your hours are, that you have that right to not be connected.
Could this apply to your wife or to your husband, where you just want to disconnect and we can seek coverage and protection from city council legislation? Like, hey, leave me alone, huh? I want 8 hours to myself.
I can't legislate that, but I feel your pain, man. Some of my colleagues actually brought that up as well.
Oh, I've had it many times, many times. Do appreciate it, Councilman Rafael Espinal, who actually led the charge so that if you hear some music and you're toe-tapping, you know, like you, Brian Mongluch, you know, hipster millennial with your skinny jeans, your man bun, and your canvas Converse sneakers, you could actually get up and dance and not be cited for a ticket or arrested like it used to be in the days of Mike Wimbadachich, Rudy Giuliani.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
Know him gone, a Rikers Island. He never won, go a Rikers Island. But now
41. And if you look at the correctional facilities of the city of New York, the main one, Rikers Island, completely out of control, where the inmates run the asylum. And what does our mayor, the part-time mayor, the dope from Park Slope, do? Absolutely jack diddly squat, nothing at all. The problems continue. In fact, this is the head of the Correctional Officers Association talking about how bad it's become for his membership.
We're heading down a real slippery slope, down a real dark alley. We need these jails to be safe, and we need the jails to be safe today.
And then he was asked, you think the mayor cares about the men and women who work for the New York City Department of Corrections?
Do I think Mayor de Blasio want to see one of us get killed? No. But I don't think he cares enough to do anything to stop it from happening.
And that is so true, so true. You know, I've been in lockups, not only here, but around the country. And they have what is called the Bing, segregation. Now, you could go to the Bing for two different reasons. Give you an example. When Who Dat, you know, the Who Dat Nation, New Orleans, that degenerate hip-hop monster, rapper, Lil Wayne, an idiot who shot himself early in his life, got arrested. He ended up doing about 6 to 7 months on Rikers Island. And in fact, he wrote it in his memoirs. And you know what he did the first night? He had his own cell, 8-by-6-foot cell. He cried. He admitted he cried, little baby. Get out of here, poo-putt, Maytag. So then he recognized that if he got mixed into the general population on the rock, They were going to eat him up, take his commissary, take his manhood, the whole nine yards. He'd be their Maytag. So they put him in protective custody. You know what? That's called Punk City. And whether you're a snitch or you've decided you're going to break ranks with your gang, like the Bloods, the Crips, the Latin Kings, or MS-13, they'll put you in PC, protective custody, Punk City. Or even like when you did 8 months, like the subway gunman Bernard Goetz, for your own protection, they put you in Punk City, protective custody. Now, that's segregation. That's the Bing. You're in an 8-by-4-foot cell, 23 hours a day. You get an hour for recreation. And that's not necessarily for people who've done anything wrong while they're in jail. Yet, the people who slash, the people who will fight, the people who will come in swinging and winging and attack correctional officers indiscriminately, they can no longer be put. That's right. They can no longer be put in the Bing or in segregation. They call it enhanced supervision housing unit for inmates who act out. These inmates are given added counseling and programming. And all that does is buff them up. And it makes them think that they got it like that. And if you look at the two most recent incidents, a guy was banging a basketball against the wall at a gym outside the Otis Bannum Correctional Center. So the CO, the school, the correctional officer said, hey, knock it off. Go back to your dorm. This guy was one of the many Blood members. So he would not forgive. He would not forget. And then all of a sudden, even though he was awaiting a court hearing on a murder and assault charge, he decided a week later he's going to toss hot water at the face of that same CO screw and punched him in the face and broke his nose. Now, old school would have been that the other correctional officers would have manned up and they would have taken that inmate and given him the beatdown of his life. Pain compliance. It's just like we talked about yesterday when the NYPD was shushed away by thugs up in Washington Heights, forced to put their tail between their legs, yelled at, screamed at by a mob on the street, and they didn't go right into the mob and start locking guys up, take them to the station house and rough them up. But what's happening now is the inmates realize there is no retaliation. There is no segregation. There is no Bing. That you can come up to a correctional officer, a screw, and you can take a straight-edge razor, or you can take a sharpened object, and you can slash them in the face like they do to other inmates and get away with it. And they're doing it time and time again. And if you notice, in many instances, the correctional officers themselves are not giving each other backup. They're wussing out. This is what I would do. It's 3 o'clock in the morning, right? Hey, Brian Mongoluch, you're in a cell. Hey, Justin B. Love, you're in the dormitory with 40 guys. Everybody out in the corridor, no clothes on. Line them up, squat and thrust. We're checking up the Hershey Highway to make sure that you don't have any implements on you that could cause harm to another inmate, a correctional officer, or even yourself. That's right, because we wouldn't want a straight edge razor or a scalpel stuck up your tuchus that could end up cutting you up, and then we got to spend tens of thousands of dollars to fix you up at Bellevue Hospital. Forget about that. Make their lives miserable. Toss their cells and their dormitories at 3 o'clock in the morning. Look for anything conceivable that is considered illegal paraphernalia or illegal contraband. Make their life miserable when they're in the lockup. But you got to come and defend the backs of the correctional officers. Because if you notice, the politicians, they don't want to be on the rock. They just want to close it. They don't go to the Brooklyn House. They're not going to go to the new Queens House when it reopens. They're not going to go to any of the newer facilities they're talking about to replace Rikers Island. They don't go to the floating jail off of Hunts Point. No. All they do is have press conferences. So if you notice, there's a pattern here. Crime stats are down. They want less inmates on Rikers Island and the other correctional facilities. And they don't mind that all of a sudden cops and correctional officers lose their dignity, lose their respect, and get turned into Maytags of the prisoners and the thugs in the streets. Oh, yeah, your stats will be down. But then who rules the nights on the streets? It won't be 5-0. And who will rule the corridors on Rikers Island? It won't be the CEOs.
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And the Drive at 5.
There are so many ways to do it.
On air. Online. On the app.
That's unbelievable.
77 WABC.
But then the
Padre, Filio, Spiritu Santo. It's the March of the Protector of Pedophiles in the Roman Catholic Church. First Pope Francis, closer to his fellow Argentine Che in philosophy than JC, who, if you remember, coming back from Chile, said it was fake news that there were pedophiles being protected by the Archdiocese of the Roman Catholic Church. And so he's back in the Vatican trying to find his footwork in this regard, because he's catching massive grief, as he should. But in our neck of the woods, we have Timothy Cardinal Dolan. What a piece of work he is. So he decided to go up to Albany and personally lobby Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, about this look-back law that would protect the victims of pedophile priests, and this is what he had to say.
The look-back we find to be very strangling, because we unfortunately have precedent. When that happens, the only organization targeted is the Catholic Church.
The only organization targeted is the Catholic Church. Well, that's because you got so many freaking pedophiles in the church. In fact, he had the culions, he had the huevos to go up and lobby the governor and his very dear friends, because the Republicans in the state Senate and the conservatives, they fawn all over Cardinal Dolan when he talks about protecting the pedophiles in the Catholic Church. John Flanagan, Republican leader from Suffolk County, Michael Long, the Conservative Party chairman. It's just sort of like, oh, Cardinal Dolan, yeah, what can we do? What can we do? Dolan's visit coincided on the day that the Buffalo Diocese released the names of, get this, 42 priests who were removed from the ministry, were retired or left the ministry after allegations of sexual abuse of a minor. 42 in Buffalo alone. Do you know how many in the New York Archdiocese? 225 removals had to take place because they had victimized young children. So you say to yourself, if you're a rock-ribbed, all-American Roman Catholic, you go to church every Sunday, you send your kids to Catholic school, you know, you have to obviously work maybe 2-3 jobs just to make ends meet because of the tuition. When you're sitting there and you're falling asleep while the priest is giving you a sermon because the priest is from Nigeria or Colombia or Poland and doesn't know anything about your area, in fact, would get lost if somebody didn't guide him around, because they can't get enough priests in America because they won't let them freaking get married, which is so ridiculous since all the apostles got married. And the only reason that rule was ever passed is the church realized when the priest dies, his inheritance goes not to the family, the wife and the children left behind, but to the Roman Catholic Church and the Archdiocese. So it was all a land grab. It was all a money grab. And because of that, it's become a haven for pedophiles. So tell me, Republican state senators, why you continue to protect the Archdiocese, Timothy Cardinal Dolan, who had a history when he was in Milwaukee of protecting pedophiles, in St. Louis of protecting pedophiles, like the Roman Catholic Church in the Vatican has done it, through this Pope who was supposed to be progressive, liberal, advanced. He was going to expunge and eradicate this problem, and now he's just complicated it all the more. A pox on these pedophile protectors. Don't give them any money when the collection plate comes around on Sunday.